And, of course, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls with Joel Skousen. There's much more for me to talk with him about. And are we headed for World War III? That is the bottom line, my friends. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. This is our final hour to go. Joel Skousen with us. We'll take your calls. Joel, just recently, the International Monetary Fund has admitted the Chinese yuan into the reserve currency basket. What does that mean to us?
Well, there's a lot of hype on the internet about this being the prelude to the destruction of the dollar, and I vehemently disagree. Basically, the IMF is an instrument of globalism, and just as the globalists have been assisting and building, and Russia and China as military, enemies in the future, they've also gone to great lengths to bring them into the World Trade Organizations and to the IMF and the World Bank. And that's part of the reason for bringing China in. Frankly, they don't deserve to be one of the reserve currencies. They haven't met stringent requirements on transparency. They've made a few compromises in order to get, in as a reserve currency. But frankly, the private investor firms say there's going to be no change towards our use of the yuan or the renminbi as a reserve currency because we don't trust China. And they can change their rules at any minute. They're not transparent. And if you look at the totals, for example, they have what's called in the IMF for special drawing rights. This is where they use a basket of currencies to loan to other countries. And they'll be bringing a yuan into that, which will be used to loan to Asian countries that have, you know, dealings with China. But, for example, the United States dollar has a weighted a percentage of 41-some percent within the basket of currencies. Its actual reserve status as people who use dollars represents about 61% in the world of reserve currencies. The euro, for example, is weighted somewhere around 13%, and it's up in the 20s or 30% in terms of actual reserve status. So you see, just because they allow the yuan to have a weighted average of 10, for example, 10% of the basket, doesn't mean that it's actually going to be used at that 10% level. So I frankly think it's overblown. This is more globalism trying to play nice to China, just like the U.S. in its dealings with China, and they don't stand up to China in its aggression in the Far East. They do send a token destroyer in there to make it appear as if they're being strong, but they're not. They continue to have military exercises with China to show and share our military expertise with China or to let them spy on our operations. We're doing everything, basically, to make sure that China is a strong enemy right when it comes to World War III.
Why are there no ISIS attacks in Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, Dubai? Those places are left unscathed. How come?
And Israel and Jordan and Turkey. There's no ISIS attacks in Turkey, and that's because the ISIS leaders, who I believe are Israeli, Arab, trained to become leaders and to manage this situation, don't give the orders and don't train for those types of things because they know that these are countries which all are part of the supply chain on orders from the U.S., Saudi Arabia in particular, supplying weapons, ammunition, and money to ISIS, as well as Bahrain and Qatar and Jordan during the training for ISIS. Now, the U.S. claims that they joined ISIS after their training was finished in Jordan, but that goes along with what I'm saying. They basically say a part of you are, you're now ISIS. There is really very little difference. But these countries are not attacked because the ISIS leadership knows these are the people who supply us and work with us. I mean, if anybody should be attacked, it should be Israel. I mean, Israel should be the focus of all that it is for all the Muslims in the Middle East. Why not
ISIS? Yeah, I mean, you're not advocating attacking Israel.
No, but I'm saying ISIS should be if, in fact, it were a legitimate terrorist organization because all the Muslim radicals hate Israel just like they hate the United States. So why no attacks? And why no attacks on the United States? You know, even after 9/11, if you assume that it was a legitimate terrorist attack, which I don't, you have a wide-open border with Mexico. We've had no normal terrorist attacks before or since 9/11. And I think the reason is because the U.S. in managing these terror organizations doesn't want the United States to demand, people to demand that border be closed. That would get in the way of a major multicultural agenda of the globalists to water down conservative voting power in the United States by flooding this nation with illegal immigrants.
If there is an ISIS attack on the United States here, is it a false flag, in your opinion?
They would all be false flags in the sense that the U.S. runs these terror organizations. And that isn't to say that the little guys within the terror cadres aren't legitimate haters of the United States, but they're not being allowed to infiltrate through the southern border.
They could be rogues, right?
There could be, but there hasn't been. That's the point. It's a wide open border. Why not even some rogue agents? It shows to me how tightly controlled this terrorism is. I mean, look, even a rogue agent isn't going to get across the United States and through all these borders without some support. And so I don't think the support's there because the leaders in ISIS and other in Al-Qaeda, I mean, before, you know, whatever happened to Al-Qaeda, by the way?
Well, I was going to say, where'd they go?
You see, Al-Qaeda, I think that's one of the reasons for creating ISIS as a new, more vehement form of terrorism, is because the world was getting tired of Al-Qaeda. Everybody was claiming to be Al-Qaeda, and nothing the U.S. did ever stopped Al-Qaeda from being. And suddenly, they're nowhere now.
They don't exist.
They don't exist, and now it's all ISIS. I mean, can't people see this is absolutely bizarre? This is completely unreasonable. Any thinking person, but nobody thinks because the media will not do that. You can't tell me they don't see the same things we do.
I know. And where's Zawahiri, the so-called head of Al-Qaeda? Where is this guy? You know, the guy who was with bin Laden during the 9/11. Where is he?
I mean, look at the bin Laden fraud. I mean, the U.S. didn't kill bin Laden in that raid in Abbottabad. Bin Laden had died in 2002 of kidney failure.
You're convinced of that.
What I think they did was kill one of the Osama bin Laden lookalikes that the CIA had been using to falsify videos of Osama bin Laden taking credit for 9/11.
Well, and it wouldn't be hard to find lookalikes out there in the Middle East, that's for sure.
And all of these notices, everything from ISIS, everything from Al-Qaeda, when you're going to announce taking credit for something, it always comes through one internet operation, SITE, site, and it's a... It's run by Rita Katz, an Israeli citizen, U.S. dual citizen who works very closely with the government. Now, you tell me this, George. Why would any of these terrorist organizations make their announcements through a government-connected website?
They shouldn't.
They shouldn't unless they're working for government, unless that's the predominant. I mean, it's just incredible. But the media, and I fault them, they do not ask these crucial questions. They do not bring out these crucial issues.
Let me tell you why. Because on the face of it, if a major network even thought that parts of government were involved in terrorist activities or training or anything, they'd be drummed out. And I don't think they want to bring it up, Joel.
No, I agree. And that means that shows how much control there is of government over certain portions of the mainstream media. I mean, even Fox News is owned by Rupert Murdoch, a known globalist. And so Fox News will attack Obama and will give conservative opinions about things, but they will not touch conspiracy. In fact, they will drum you off the airwaves in Hannity or O'Reilly if you ever bring up something that even hints of conspiracy. But that's what my mission is really to blow the whistle, warn the people that there is a massive globalist conspiracy to take away our liberty. And it's by Americans, by British, by Europeans who have bought into this agenda. It's a very serious threat to us. These are the open manifestations, this phony war on terror. And soon the mother of all terrorism, not soon, but you know, I think in the next decade, we're going to get the mother of all terrorism, a nuclear preemptive strike on the U.S. military, not cities, on the military. Because the Russians and Chinese who are going to execute this and who are preparing for this with massive new missiles and weapons of mass destruction don't want to take down the West in the economy. They don't want to destroy a lot of it. They want to take down the bully of the world. They don't want to be the bully of the world. So they're going to hit military targets and then try to blackmail the West into submission. And our globalists know this is coming. They're going to let it fall. Why else are they building huge, deep, new underground bunkers? not for terrorism. They know this strike is coming, George. Even retired leaders from the DEA.
All right, when you say military, what's exactly the target, in your opinion?
Well, first of all,
hard to say, I'm sure.
The targets are all of the missile silos that we have. We have no mobile missiles. Our silos are going to be taken out in a preemptive strike.
We've got submarines.
Yes, but in 1997, and I announced this first on Coast to Coast, clear back when Art Bell interviewed me in early 2000, that under President Bill Clinton, the U.S. revised all of their nuclear doctrine and changed it to say to the nuclear, don't rely on launch on warning, but prepare to absorb a nuclear first strike and then retaliate afterwards.
I remember that. You're right.
And in this very same year, 1997, Bill Clinton agreed unilaterally to keep 50% of our ballistic missile submarines in port at any one time as a goodwill gesture to show them that we're laying down supine, making our submarines vulnerable just to prove that we have no hostile intent. George, that policy of keeping 50% of our missile submarine in port is still in vogue today.
That's dangerous.
That's very dangerous, and it shows that the U.S. intends to take the first hit, because here's what it does to globalism. They come out of their bunkers after, you know, the military has been in the whole Western world depends on the U.S. to defend them. And they say,
of course.
Now there's the U.S. military is gone. It's been decapitated. Our only hope of prosecuting this great evil war is to form a militarized global government.
An alliance.
An alliance. And based upon NATO and other things, they'll build a new world order, basically a militarized one with taxation power and global police powers, et cetera, and no one will be able to say a thing because you've just been struck with nuclear weapons. You thought 9/11 ginned up or destroyed people's resistance to NSA spying. Think what a nuclear attack on our
country would do. Oh, my gosh. People be on their knees saying, do whatever you have to do.
Right. Do whatever it takes, and that's what I believe they intend.
All right, let's take the calls in the time we have left. We'll start with Paul in Seattle, Washington, west of the Rockies. Thank you, Paul. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Thank you. Joel, I think you're right on point with Iran. I thought of that it was a setup deal. Now, I want to ask you a question about North Korea. I believe that we hacked into Sony. And if you remember that Angelina Jolie was speaking out against Obama, and who of all people was exposed, one of the people anyway, was Angelina Jolie from the Sony hack. And also, I had mentioned this on another show, George, with your financial analyst. There's three countries, Iran, North Korea, and the Sudan, who I think are, there's some kind of monetary thing they're not under. And so I think in the future, we're going to see something happen in the Sudan. And I'll take my answer off the air on your comment, Joel. And thank you, George, and Merry Christmas if I don't.
You too, Paul. Thank you. Go ahead, Joel.
Well, he brings up some very good points. You know, the U.S. actually hires the most hackers in the world under the NSA umbrella. In fact, I think that, you know, a lot of the attacks on computers that go out are U.S. Hacker created in order to justify or make people fear in the need for more government control of the Internet, more safety involved. So it wouldn't surprise me, although I can't prove it one way or the other, that the U.S. was involved in the hack of Sony and blaming it on North Korea. But North Korea is a pariah regime. It is the most horrible regime in the world. Why we should treat Iran as we do and yet give a free pass to North Korea can only be explained, I think, by the fact that the globalists know that this is the trigger event. Now, I'm not as much of a fan of the idea that we're after countries that stop using the dollar, like Iran or Sudan or other countries. For example, the BRICS nations claim that they've stopped using the dollar and are trading with their own currencies, trying to bring down the dollar. But in reality, when you analyze that, you find the BRICS nations still deal in about 90% of their economy in dollars, like Brazil, because they trade so much with the United States and with Europe and have to use the dollar. It's true that with Russia they don't use the dollar, but that's only less than 10% of the dollar trade. So I don't think that the dollar's coming down because of certain leftist and communist governments stopping using the dollar.
Is it possible, Joel, that you could be wrong and that the terrorism is really there? I know there are a lot of bizarre parts of this puzzle, but could you be wrong?
Well, certainly there is terrorism, real terrorism, because the U.S. has created it. Ron Paul's right. It's backlash. And hardly any of this existed until the U.S. started intervening in the Middle East. I'm just saying that it's controlled at the top, and I don't think I am wrong, because I've got the evidence, that just like we presented on the show, and in my World Affairs brief, I go through reams of evidence.
Now, those on the bottom, the hatred folks, the insane ones, the thugs, they may not know about this.
That's right, and I'm convinced they don't. I mean, you don't keep a conspiracy of this broad in vogue without limiting the people who know where the control is. So I think that's...
Do you know if this is true, how diabolical it is, Joel?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up that word, because I do think the only way to explain the longevity of this conspiracy, which has been going on since, you know, we can track it in modern times into the 1800s, but mostly during the last century, it's got such a generational effect. There's no way a single individual could set this in motion and keep it going unless there's some satanic component of this, revelatory, diabolical component that keeps this thing on track generation after generation.
All right, let's go back to Joe in the Bronx. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good.
I wanted to ask your guest, Joel. I wanted to know what your opinion is on who stands to benefit from this globalist ideology, and also, could ISIS represent a proxy war between the U.S. and Russia? What do you think the solution to this globalism could be?
Wow, big and difficult questions. Let me try to take those one at a time. Let's talk about who benefits from this. This is one of the greatest conundrums about the globalism and war and creating conflict and terrorism and bringing a nuclear attack upon the nation. What would be the motivation for people if the motivation, as the left says, is wealth and control of money? It doesn't wash, because these people are already the most powerful and wealthy people in the world.
Well, they got everything they need.
They got everything they need. Why would they do this? Well, it's almost the same thing that happened in World War II. You know, Wall Street built Hitler. And a lot of these people were globalist-connected companies at that time,
sure,
knowing that it would be all destroyed and they would help destroy it. But then again, you know, in the aftermath, through the Marshall Plan, they got all the contracts to rebuild, so they became wealthy again. So that's one aspect, is that they've been assured not only immunity by joining in this pact of which does control judges and law and law enforcement, they also get in on the rebuilding effort. And I think even after World War III, there'll be a rebuilding, and these people will be in control of that. But I still don't think it's a monetary thing. I think you have to look to the fact that there's got to be some kind of dark spiritual guidance to this, which I think grants people immunity.
I think you're right. Joel, hold on. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take these final phone calls. Don't go away. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Our final segment here with Joel Skousen as we talk about world events that are out there that could affect all of us. I want some short-term predictions from you, Joel, in terms of the world front. What do you think could happen over the next 3 months?
I think the major crisis is going to evolve around Syria, as we've been talking about. I think the Russians are going to join forces with all of their troops on the ground from Hezbollah, from the Syrian army, and from the Iranians that are there, and seal the border between Syria and Turkey, and that will literally cut off ISIS. I think the U.S. will do something dramatic, whether it's an Israeli attack on Syria or something, to break this logjam and to get them back in the game. It's going to be a tough go. There may well be more economic uncertainty as well in the next 3 months. I'm not one of those who believes that an economic collapse will occur, but I do think that the markets are very unstable and too high-flying, and there could be a stock market correction up to about 20%.
Russia had a civilian plane bombed. They had a jet shot down. Putin continues to show restraint. How much more can this guy take?
As I say, I don't think that the U.S. is going to provoke him too much more. As we see in the Ukraine, the U.S., you know, Russia's running a stealth invasion specifically to make sure that NATO doesn't have the excuse to confront him directly. All of these are signs that he's, like in Syria, not going to war with Turkey. There's a lot of rumors about Turkey stopping ships, Russian ships coming through the Bosphorus and the Dardanelles, which is illegal. They're not allowed to do that unless there's a declared war. I don't think it's going to arise to anything more than delaying ships by about 4 hours, which is really all that's happening. Once again, this is all of these three things point that Russia isn't ready to go head-to-head with the West. And the West doesn't want, by the way, a conventional war with Russia. That
No.
doesn't induce people to join a militarized global government. They want to continue to provoke Russia and wait until they attack the West with nuclear weapons. That is what gins up an excuse for a third world war.
But I don't think they'll do it.
Who will do
the
what?
The Russians. I don't think the Russians will do it.
Do what?
Attack.
Well, that's what they're preparing for. They're not building new Topol-M missiles every month for nothing while the U.S. is disarming. Do you realize that we took all the three warheads off our Minuteman III missiles and turned them into single warhead missiles? That's abject disarmament while Russia and China are building dozens of new missiles every quarter.
All right.
You can't tell me they're not planning on something.
We shall see. Let's go now to Tim in Racine, Wisconsin. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Good, Timothy.
These are the things that nightmares are made of. I don't know where nuclear warheads will strike. I have no idea. I don't know if your guest does. Where? Is there a safe zone? Is there any safe zones that you know of, first of all? Second of all, is there anything we can do if we're not in a safe zone that we can make our chances of survival a little better? Because the way I look at it, if you're in a bunker, and I hate to break the news to all you bunker people out there, that if you have a bunker, and even if you're 20 feet under, when that bomb strikes within about a mile of you or two, it's going to vaporize anything and everything. There won't even be a sign of life. Because the bombs that they dropped in Japan, those are little pancakes compared to what they got now. These bombs are about 1,500 times stronger than those bombs. So if there's a bomb that goes off, I hate to tell everybody, but you're going to be vaporized instantly. Your car, you won't even know you had a car. You won't even know you had a house.
Reaction, Joel?
Yeah, you know, I'm an expert in this field, and in my book, Strategic Relocation, I talk about where the nuclear targets are and where safe zones are. In fact, you won't be vaporized if you're, you know, outside of a mile of those targets, and within 5 miles there's virtually no destruction except fallout. And so if I'm correct in my estimate that they're hitting military targets, not cities per se, then I think, you know, it's very wise that you need to be away from specific military targets. I mean, even cities like Seattle, San Diego, Colorado Springs, Omaha, Nebraska, Jacksonville, Florida, these have military targets in them. And if you draw a 5-mile circle around the military bases there, you can see where the destruction zone is. But outside of that, you can survive. And most people in the United States will only have to deal with fallout. And, you know, I've written several books on the subject because I want people to survive. The government is preparing to survive. Why shouldn't you? But you're not going to be able to depend on the government. But don't take the attitude that we're all going to die. Remember that 50% of the people in Hiroshima and Nagasaki survived even without protection. 50%.
Sure.
So you can survive, and there will be, if there's any hope, remember in this horrible war that's coming, that it will drive a lot of good people out of the cities, because with an EMP strike that precedes this nuclear attack, there's not going to be any electricity. Within 3 days, there's going to be chaos of people panicking.
Oh, my God. Riots in the streets.
And so what I'm saying, it drives the good people out of the cities and some of the bad people, too. But I think if there's any real hope in this, is that good people will be driven to areas of safety where they will be able to have new majorities that can resist. because even the globalists have to play lip service to democracy and to majorities. And so if you have new conservative majorities in rural areas that can resist these types of things, I think that's where there is some hope.
What have you seen in Syria, in the Middle East, that convinces you that ISIS may be a product of the United States?
A product of what?
The United States. I think it's not bombing the columns of trucks and Humvees when they had their chance.
Yeah, and it is, for example, the videos the Iraqis showed in their parliament of U.S. helicopters resupplying ISIS. That's a direct proof that, you know, this is a U.S. creation. I think the parade of videos are also a proof that this was, I mean, these were staged. You don't do a beheading with a knife. It's never been done before. You don't have all these orange jumpsuits. They must have bought a container load from the United States to dress everybody up in orange jumpsuits.
And nice white tennis shoes.
And then you have all these people giving heartfelt confessions before they die saying, hey, we're going to be killed. Well, why give the confession if you know you're going to be killed? Why cooperate?
Well, here's the other thing. They seem so calm.
That's right. And you notice, George, none of them flinched when the knife gets to the throat and the video's cut. None of them flinch. They've been told this is a staged video. They are killed afterwards. They're betrayed. But I think I think the proof that none of them flinch when a knife goes to the throat means they know that they've been told it's been a staged video that we're trying to make. You know, before we send you back to England or the U.S., you know, we want to have you help us make a video to make ISIS look bad. And then they're betrayed.
Let's go to Tim in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hello. First, I'd like to say I agree with much of what your guest is saying.
Okay.
But what I wanted to mention is what I've seen on the Chinese news station a few weeks ago. They were talking about taking Taiwan by force.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing the missiles they were going to use to sink U.S. carriers with. And they had the animation drawings of the carrier blowing up. But they also said, if they need to, they nuke the U.S. if necessary, that their missiles could strike us within 30 minutes.
What do you think of all of that, Joel?
Well, you know, the Chinese have used this threat about nuking U.S. cities. I still don't think they actually mean it. I do think that they're only intending. Remember, they're taking down the evil empire, the bully of the world who's been intervening around the world. You know, you don't gain any credit. You don't establish your own new world order, and China and Russia are preparing to run their own new world order by destroying civilization. They need the West. They need the engine of the economy. I think all that adds up to the fact of hitting military targets. Even though the Chinese are very good about threatening, I don't think they intend to go through with their threat on cities alone.
I think they have their eyes on Taiwan.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's no question they're going to take Taiwan back. And the Philippines, I think they've got a grudge match with Japan at the beginning of this war. And I think when you see North Korea attack the South in earnest, cross the border with 2 million men, within a week we'll have nuclear war. That's a prediction.
Oh my God.
You can take to the bank. And I think it's very important to understand, I think the U.S. has secret weapon systems they won't use to defend us, but I think after the first strike they'll bring out maybe it's space-based anti-missile systems or other things that they'll use to stop any further attacks while they regroup under the global New World Order.
How come these people are screwing up our lives, Joel?
They're evil. That's why. And a lot of people don't understand that. They just say, why can't we all get along? Because there are evil people in this world who really do want to screw us up.
On both sides?
Yeah, on both sides.
I think so, too. Jim in Delaware. Thanks, Jim. Go ahead.
Hey, George, didn't you guys say that why isn't the terrorists attacking Israel?
Why aren't they attacking Israel, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait?
Turkey.
The reason they're not attacking Israel, the plan is that Iran gets the bomb and takes out Israel. Think Israel would allow that?
I think it's going to be the other way around. Somebody's going to take out Iran.
Yeah.
How did they let that get away? Look, the Shah was no Boy Scout. He was a butcher and not well-liked. We put him in office. But how did we allow that to fall apart?
Well, we betrayed the Shah, and remember the CIA was keeping the Ayatollah Khomeini in this lavish Paris villa all those years he was waiting to come back. Those bills were being paid for by the CIA. So, you see, we were managing both sides. This is the way that the globalists operate. They manage both sides.
And he comes back, the Iranian hostage situation occurs, and voila, look what happened there.
And, of course, that initiated the whole Iran-Contra scandal of trading guns for, you know, what was really happening in the Iran-Contra scandal is that we were managing terrorists clear back then. It came back to bite us, and the Lockerbie bombing of Pan Am flight, forgot what the number was, but, you know, there's just an awful lot going on behind the scenes because the U.S. is dickering and dealing with terrorism that comes back to bite us.
We've got Adam in Mississippi now. Welcome to Coast, Adam. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, George. Thank you for having me on the show.
Sure thing.
I agree with everything that Joel is saying. I've did my own research throughout the past year. People look at me like I'm crazy, obviously. But my whole thing is, how do we as U.S. citizens rise above this whole mess that our government has created? Not necessarily to overthrow the government, but to get them to stop doing what they're doing.
That is the $64,000 question, Joel. How do we stop it?
Yeah, and that's what Joe of Brooklyn asked, too. What's the solution here? Well, the solution is you've got to expose this conspiratorial agenda. So that's why the media hates the word conspiracy and tries to denigrate anyone who breathes that word.
Yeah, that's true.
It's because they don't. That's the big gorilla in the room. You don't want to expose the fact there's a conspiracy power and that it controls judges. Look what John Roberts did. Got the phone call of the night, supposedly a conservative, and turned around and threw Obamacare at us. That's how deeply they control even the so-called conservatives in the courts. So, you know, the problem is, even if you elected a Ron Paul, and the reason I mention him is because this guy is so principled, he cannot be bought. We may disagree with some of the things that Ron says, but he can't be bought. He's an honest man. If he got to be president and he tasked the NSA to go spy on all the suspected globalists to get the goods on him so he could prosecute them, the NSA would come back and say, there's nothing on him. They would lie because they're controlled by the dark side of government. And then even if you got the evidence, how could you depend on judges to prosecute? They'd probably throw it out. What I'm saying is they control so many parts of the levers of power that I'm afraid I have very little hope for the ability of restoring liberty as a world or as a nation. But I do believe, I do have hope, that in the chaos that they create, there's going to be pockets of liberty that will survive. And that's why I think we have to think about surviving this war, not having an apathetic view, we're all going to die, so don't try. We need to prepare to survive the war, and that's why I've written my various books to help people do that. And then we need to get out of harm's way and get to safer places where we can restore liberty, at least within pockets of the area. That's the hope that I have. And I know it isn't a rosy picture. I'm not promising 100% success, but I'm just saying that's my realistic view.
And for people who want to get a hold of you, Joel, how do they do that?
The easiest way is to email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. And all they have to do is ask for a sample copy of my World Affairs Brief, and I'll send that over to them. My other website is joelskousen.com, where they can see all my books. And you can get to either website from the other. So,
now we've got links for you at coasttocoastam.com.
Right.
Joel, thank you so much. Have yourself a wonderful holiday, okay? I can't believe we're in December already.
Been a pleasure. Thank you.
Got it. Joel Skousen for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Bowles, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.